And think, as many of us will know, that Jacob and Esau had an interesting relationship. And Jacob wasn't necessarily the most honest of people. So he tricked Esau out of the birthright, and he tricked Esau out of the blessing. So the birthright normally goes to the firstborn. Esau was the first of the two that came out, so he was classed as the firstborn. And he came in one day after having been out in the field, and there was a pot of stew on the go, and he said, "Well, look, I'm hungry." So Jacob said, "Right, well, if you give me your birthright, I'll give you a bit of stew." Now, that's fair enough. Personally, I would have gone for a little bit more than a bowl of stew, you know, maybe a rare steak with some chips, peppercorn sauce, or a nice Indian meal, but a bowl of stew, you know, well, there you go. And also, when it came to the blessing that would normally have gone again to the firstborn, Jacob and his mother Rebecca plotted to get the blessing as well, which involved getting the kind of the fleece of an animal, sticking it over Jacob's arms so he seemed hairy. Apparently Esau was a hairy bloke. And all sorts of things. And so Jacob stole the blessing as well. Now, there's one thing that's important to point out right at the outset. When Rebecca was pregnant with twins, the twins jostled within her. And God said to Rebecca, "There are two nations within your womb. The older will serve the younger." So God had given a very clear word there right at the outset that Esau would serve Jacob, and that the nation that came from Esau would serve the nation that came from Jacob. And yet Jacob tried to do all this in his own strength. So he tried to get the birthright by taking advantage of Esau's hunger. And he tried to get the blessing, and well, did get both of them, got the blessing via trickery. But God had already promised it. He didn't need to go to those measures. He didn't need to go to those extremes. God had already promised it. And it's important that we do just trust in the word of God and not try to, by other means, bring these things about. So, what happens during chapters 28 to 31? Well, first of all, Isaac and Rebekah say to Jacob, "Go and get a wife from your mother's family." So basically, go back to where Abraham originally came from and get a wife from there. Whilst on the journey, Jacob had a dream where he sees a stairway to heaven. I was thinking of getting one of the musicians to just play a little bit of the song every time I said stairway to heaven, but I realized I wouldn't have time. So he has this dream where he sees a stairway to heaven with angels ascending and descending on the stairway, and the Lord is at the top. And the Lord makes a promise to him that he would give him the land. This is repeating the promise that he gave to Abraham and to Isaac. Jacob asks for God's protection and blessing on the journey, and he makes a promise that when he returns, he will give the Lord a tenth of everything that the Lord has given him. Jacob heads off to the land where his mum came from, and when he gets there, he meets his uncle, Laban, and falls in love with Rachel, the younger of Laban's two daughters. And Jacob works for Laban for 7 years as his salary, essentially. Yeah, he didn't have a dowry, he didn't have anything, as his dowry for marrying Rachel. There is a trick, and Laban tricks Jacob into marrying Leah instead. The culture of the time, the bride would be made up but would have a full-on veil, so you didn't actually see the face of the person you were marrying. And basically, it was Leah and not Rachel. So Jacob works for another 7 years in order to marry Rachel. And then he works for 6 years in order to build up flocks and so on. And then after that whole period of time, so he's been out there for 20 years, after all that time, he heads back to where he himself came from, which is, you know, the land of where Abraham and Isaac settled, and the land of promise. So that, in a nutshell, is what happens in four chapters. There is the whole chapter in the middle where Leah gives birth to a son, and then she gives birth to another son, and another son, another son, and then the servants get involved, and they give birth to children, and then finally Rachel has a child, and that's Joseph, and then we get, a musical. So, I'm not going to talk about that bit at all, okay? But there are a couple of things that I want to draw out from this whole passage. And I would encourage you to go and read the passage, but there are a few things I want to draw out. First of all, God meets us when we are at our lowest. Jacob had tricked Esau out of the blessing and the birthright. And basically, although he had been told to go back to the land where his mum came from, he scarpered. He was fearful of his brother. You see that on his return 20 years later, when he finds out that Esau's on his way to meet him, he divides his kind of family and his property and his belongings up into two groups with the hope that if Esau attacks, one half might get away and survive. So even after 20 years, he is fearful of Esau. So he tricked his brother out of the blessing and the birthright and then scarpered. Okay. So he had nothing at all as he's heading off to where his mum came from. And as he gets to Bethel, he falls asleep. Okay, so he's walked for quite a distance. I was reading, someone said it was about 40 miles. I don't know if that's true or not. But he gets there, he falls asleep. Now, he hasn't got a tent, he hasn't got an airbed, he hasn't got a sleeping bag, he just falls asleep. And it says that a stone is his pillow. Now, I've been camping, right? I don't sleep in a tent when I've got a nice airbed, a duvet. We take a duvet when we camp. We don't do any of this sleeping bag rubbish. We take a duvet, yeah? But, you know, I still don't sleep. And there I am with my airbed, my pillow, my duvet, and all the rest of it. He's out there with nothing, lying on the ground with a boulder as a pillow, and he falls asleep. And he sleeps a good night's sleep. But during this night's sleep, he has a dream. So first of all, God met him and gave him a good night's sleep. Secondly, he had this dream of the stairway. Okay? And God makes him a promise. But he meets him when he's at his lowest. God met him when he was at his lowest, when he's running away from his brother, when he's got nothing, when he's lying essentially with a boulder as a pillow. He has nothing, and yet God meets him. And how true is that for each and every one of us? That it was when we were at our lowest that God met us. And it's when we are at our lowest that God meets us. And he encourages us, and he builds us back up, and he blesses us, and he loves us. We don't have to get it all right at the outset. We just have to keep our eyes fixed on him. And how true are that with Jesus? Where we see, for God shows his love for us, that while we were still sinners, Christ died for us. It's when we were at our lowest. Okay? However, during the dream, God makes the promise to Jacob that he will give him the land on which he is sleeping. Now, he doesn't just say, I'll give you that. He says, I will give you and your descendants the land. Now, I want you to think about that, because that's the exact same promise that Abraham had. It is the exact same promise that Isaac had. Now, Abraham, when he had the promise, God said, I will give you and your descendants this land. Well, that would have included Isaac and Jacob. And yet God made the same promise to Isaac. I will give you and your descendants the land. Well, that would have included Jacob, but he then says to Jacob, I will give you and your descendants the land. God is interested in each and every one of us. I would say to all the youngsters here today, if you have grown up in a strong, well, I'll say it to everyone, let me rephrase that. I will say this to everyone. If you have grown up in a strong Christian family, don't kind of sit there on the blessing and on the calling of your parents. God has a calling for you as well. Each and every one of you. So if you're one of the people who've been out here today being prayed for, God has a calling for you. Seek him. Seek his calling over your life. Don't just kind of think, well, this is what my parents did. This is how my parents kind of lived. This is the expectation that my parents had. I'll do the same. Because God is interested in you as an individual, not as the child of your parent. So seek him for his calling over your life, because he has got an exciting journey ahead for you. When Jacob woke up from the dream, he woke up and he knew he had met with God. And he makes a promise. He says, remember, he's got nothing at the moment. He says, Lord, if you get me back to this place, I will give you a tenth of everything that you give me. This is very reminiscent of Abraham. When Abraham went out to battle once, he returned and was met by Melchizedek, who was a priest. It says he was the priest of God Most High in the Bible. And he gave him a tenth of all that the Lord had given him. Now, this was before the law was written. This was before the principle of the tithe was kind of instituted. They just gave a tenth of everything that God had given them. It was a love offering. It was a gratitude, an expression of their gratitude to God for all that he had provided for them. And they made that. We see later on in the life of Jacob that he did return to Bethel. And although it doesn't specifically say, he will have remembered the promise that he made. And I am pretty certain he would have given a tenth of all that God had given him. Because when he came back, he actually came back with quite a lot of wealth. And so he gave a tenth of it to God. When we give our tithe, it is an expression of our love and our gratitude to God for all the provision that he has given us. And I want to be quite specific here. If we're not giving of our tithe to the church or the priest, as Abraham did, we might be able to come up with some reasonable sounding arguments as to why that is okay. But what it boils down to, as Malachi says, is that we're robbing God. Malachi 3 says, will man rob God? Yet you are robbing me. But you say, how have we robbed you? In your tithes and contributions. Interestingly, I don't know if you noticed this. I only noticed this a couple of months ago. When Jesus met Saul on the Damascus Road, he said, Saul, Saul, why are you persecuting me? Now, to be technically correct here, Saul was persecuting the church. Jesus had already ascended at that point. And yet, Jesus said, Saul, Saul, why are you persecuting me? So I'll personalize it to me. If I am critical of the work of the church, it's not the church I'm criticizing. It's Jesus. If I am withholding from the church, from the priest, if I'm withholding the tithe, it's not the church that misses out. We're robbing God. I just want us to reflect on that for a moment. I will just say at the moment, you know, I don't benefit from the tithes and offerings, you know, so I'm not saying this out of a self-interest. This is in the Bible. Interestingly enough, Sally and my testimony, many of you know my story, our story, so I haven't got time to go into that now. But we have found it easier to give when we have had less than when we had more. On the face of it, this doesn't make sense. But if you're trusting in God for some of your provision, it's easier to be in faith, to give some of it away and trust him for all of it. So if you are someone who has limited provision, please don't let that put you off. Trust in him. You'll be amazed. You'll be amazed. Okay? So the next part. Jacob got to the land of his mother's birth. He met his uncle, Laban. And Laban says to him, right, well, you know, will you work for me? And he says, yeah, I'll work for you. What salary? Well, look, I really fancy your daughter, okay? So I'd like to marry Rachel. So I'll tell you what, I'll work for 7 years, and you don't have to pay me anything, but after 7 years, I want to marry Rachel. So Laban probably said, oh, sounds like a good deal. 7 years go past. And it says in Genesis, so Jacob served 7 years for Rachel. And they seemed to him but a few days because of the love he had for her. Now, I realise this is going to come as a bit of a shock, but I can be a little bit grumpy at times. And there are times when Sally will say to me, you know, with you, a few days seems like 7 years. I'm obviously not quite in the right place. But Jacob was committed to work for Rachel's hand. And he did it in joy, and he did it in love. But he was committed to it. He didn't do it half-heartedly. He was committed. I mean, you know, I picture the role of someone looking after the sheep and the goats and that. So, you know, you're out in the field, and I imagine that, you know, if the sheep have had to travel quite a long way to get some food, you know, you don't wheel them all out and then wheel them all back in like we perhaps do nowadays. But I imagine it's very much, you know, you go out and the shepherd goes with them. And so the shepherd will be lying in the field overnight with them. So it would be cold during the night. It would be hot during the day. It wasn't an easy life being a shepherd. And yet he did it because he wanted to marry Rachel. He had his eyes fixed on a purpose. What are we committed to? What am I committed to? What are my eyes fixed on? Are my eyes fixed on the things of the world? Or are my eyes fixed on serving Jesus? What are my eyes fixed on? Now, you know, like I say, don't get me wrong. This time was not easy. It's interesting that later on in the story in Genesis, Laban and Jacob have a conversation. And Jacob says, if an animal killed one of your sheep, I bore the loss. If one of your sheep or goats was stolen, I bore that loss. I was consumed by heat during the day and cold by night. It was not an easy thing. But he did it because he has his eyes fixed on something. So I'll ask the question again. And I ask myself this question. What are my eyes fixed on? What are our eyes fixed on? To the point that we can serve with such joy and such love for Jesus that 7 years would seem like a few days. Now, a few months ago, Alan spoke, just after Christmas, Alan spoke on four wells. And can anyone remember what the four wells were? I was planning on tipping a couple of people off Come on, someone make you feel better. Can anyone remember the four wells? Go on. Go on, Pam. Yep. Conviction. Yay. Charismatic. Generosity, cash, yeah. Generosity. So Alan spoke on four wells. And I think that that is a really important word for us. You know, God had been speaking into Alan and Alan shared that with us. And I think it's a really important word for us. And we see in the life of Jacob, two of those being outworked. We see the commitment. He was committed to serving and he was generous. Okay. I would encourage you, if you're sitting there and thinking, what's he on about? What four wells? Go on the podcast. It will be on there. Go and look on the podcast and find Alan's two sermons on the four wells. Right? It was the end of January, beginning of February, because we were away, weren't we? So, you know, we didn't actually hear it as it happened. So it's amazing what you'll do to miss Alan's sermons. Yeah, go to India. Go and have a look. Go and have a listen. I think that was a really important word for us as we move forward. And, you know, I just want to lay it out there that Jacob served. He was committed to something and he was generous. We should be the same. Okay. One last point I want to draw out. So rapid fire. This, I mean, 20 minutes. God, dear. One last point I want to draw out. Love overcomes hardship. And just on that same bit, Jacob worked for Rachel for 7 years, and then he was tricked, and he worked another 7 years, okay? So 14 years he worked for Rachel's hand, and it seemed to him like a few days. He did that because he loved her, okay? God loves us. God loves us. If we think further about this, we see that love makes long and hard service short and easy. Similar to what we read in Hebrews 6, where it says, "For God is not unjust so as to overlook your work and the love that you have shown for his name in serving the saints as you still do." If we know how to value the happiness of heaven, the sufferings of this present time will be as nothing to us in comparison of it. An age of work will be as but a few days to those that love God and long for Christ's appearing. In Corrie ten Boom's autobiography, The Hiding Place, she describes how her sister, when in the prison camp, seemed to rise above the hardships and the trials. And she had her eyes fixed on the Lord. This was a horrible place. This was a, you know, an awful place. But Corrie ten Boom describes how her sister seemed to rise above it and just kind of, you know, see the Lord instead of the hardships and the trials. In all the trials of life and the challenges and difficulties that life throws at us, whether they be through ill health or hardship, let's keep our eyes fixed on Jesus. As Hebrews 12 says, "Therefore, since we are surrounded by so great a cloud of witnesses, let us also lay aside every weight and sin which clings so closely, and let us run with endurance the race that is set before us, looking to Jesus, the founder and perfecter of our faith, who for the joy that was set before him endured the cross, despising the shame, and is seated at the right hand of the throne of God." In Jesus' life, we can again see the best example of this, where through his love and for the joy set before him, he suffered the cross and endured its shame for us. What more can we do than to keep our eyes fixed on him, to love him? And as we do that, 7 years will seem like a few days. The trials of life will seem as though they're nothing. But to get that, we need to have our eyes fixed on him. I'm going to invite the band to come back up. But just to recap, in this, in these four chapters, talking about Jacob, we see that God met him. God meets us when we are at our lowest. God gave him his own calling. God gives us a calling. Jacob was generous and vowed to give a tenth. We should do the same. Jacob was committed to serving. There's a challenge there for me and you as well. And finally, love overcomes hardship so that years will seem like days as we keep our eyes fixed on him. Now, if in all of this you're sitting there and you are someone who doesn't know Jesus, and you've been sitting there today thinking, "Oh, this is a little bit unusual. We've had people coming out from amongst the congregation and speaking and saying what God's saying. And then we've got this man standing at the front talking about something that happened thousands of years ago and relating it to us and challenging us." If you don't know Jesus, I want to encourage you. Love overcomes hardship. And if you keep your eyes fixed on him, those years of trial and difficulty that we all face will seem like a few days as we walk through the challenges of life with him. So if you don't know Jesus, I will be sitting down at the front. I would invite you, come out, come and speak to me, speak to Alan, one of the guys at the front, and we will gladly introduce you to him. We will gladly introduce you to the one that will transform your life.